Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 377 of the Roguecast for June 14th, 2022. Escape Bilbo's Kitchen.
It's hot outside.
It is. We're on the edge of a series of record hot days. We're going to become Waterworld, right? And then only...
It was Fireworld, not
yeah,
Water.
Yeah, Sandblasted Mad Max World.
You mean we're going to become Tatooine?
Yes, we're going to Tatooine. Oh, sand no. Everywhere.
Man, I knew I was going to hate life.
Anakin tried to predict it for us. He hated sand.
He hates sand.
There's a lot of stuff that they predicted. They predicted rise of fascism and things like that, growing hatred of sand.
Right.
There's like really a lot of things we owe George Lucas for.
Star Wars is prophetic.
Yes. George Lucas is going to be like, I tried to warn people about sand in 1999. They didn't listen.
So the big store news, which those of you who might be on our store TikTok, I think there's like 60 of you.
Yeah.
There might be a few people on our podcast that cross over on TikTok.
If bring your friends. TikTok, yeah.
The big news, as seen on TikTok, we now have Albert coins.
Yeah, that's true. They're Rogues Gallery coins featuring an Albert emblem, our store name, and they also like function as gift certificates or just neat little commemorative coins.
Yep. Basically, you buy one, it's $10, you get it, and you can return it to the store for $10 worth of merchandise. So. It is like a gift certificate. If you have friends you're buying stuff for, you can buy them a handful of those coins and some dice bag and like give them a little jangly coin thing.
Yeah, like a little dwarven coin purse. Yeah. We had some old friends at the store stop by this weekend, and they were looking for a gift for a friend and they weren't quite sure what to do. And I told them about these and made them watch my TikTok. And it actually had the exact desired effect, which was they became incredibly excited to give their friend coins.
Well, Dave, you're just showing the TikTok to everyone. You're forcing them to
watch it. That's true. And in fact, everybody who's on this needs to go watch it right now. It's maybe about 3-4 TikToks back.
What if people don't watch TikToks?
It's time to download TikTok.
This is the one thing you
also,
TikTok for.
If you happen to be on Facebook, you may know them as Reels, which are just Facebooks for old or TikToks for old people.
I uploaded it to our YouTube channel, which we rarely use, but our Rogues Gallery YouTube channel.
Oh, crazy! Also has it. Outrageous. Go there and also look at the White Snake video from years ago, if that's on there. Because
I don't think it is. I think that's somewhere else.
Boy, if you can find that, that's something else.
It might show back up there. Who knows?
That is a commercial someone made for us.
Yeah,
without our permission or intent.
Yes, and yet there it is. Somebody, a guy out there in short shorts.
Yep.
One of your co-podcasters, Randy. Yep.
Former co-podcasters. That's not why. We didn't.
Now
we didn't
6 feet under.
We didn't quit podcasting together because he made this video, although it didn't help.
But yes, him slithering around sexily on the car while Whitesnake's Here I Go Again on My Own plays.
Yep.
Truly a great homage to the 80s. And
anyway, we have Albert coins now.
Oh, right. Yes. How did we?
Where am I? we ordered these back in. I ordered them back in May or March, actually. I guess Saturday.
Yep.
We haven't seen the kits yet, but should be soon. We'll let you all know of the next week.
That one's really good.
We got the special cover in that highlighted his butt. I made a video I was very excited about.
Yep.
It's like it can't really just be based on that graphic novel from the 80s, which was like considered sort of
around the occupation of Gotham during the power outage. That's sort of the third act.
Is that what the game does? I actually didn't see what surprised me. I was like, okay, this seems crazy, but all right.
The same company, Cryptozoic, is also putting out the DC deck building game, the stuff, the crossover collections, which are the smaller collection things.
Right, we've always liked the DC deck building games, but they did these Crisis ones. Is that what they're called?
This is the crossover collection.
Oh, okay. What are the crossover collections?
So, Birds of Prey, Rogues, and New Gods. It basically adds all those characters into the game.
Okay. I thought like all the expansions always just added characters.
So they were. These were the smaller expansions. This is them as one bigger box.
Oh, I see. Okay, they've gathered the small collections into one nicer one.
Yes, because those have been out of print for a while.
Yeah, yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. We got Exit Nightfall Manor was the first. Exit is like these, it's like the escape room games. We like the unlock and all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But Exit Nightfall Manor is the first one that is also a puzzle.
Oh, is it really? Yep. Do you mean like a puzzle, like you put the pieces in, like it somehow emerges the thing from there?
I believe so. I'm not sure if it's connected to the game or a side thing, but they're about to do a Lord of the Rings themed one.
Yeah, I think I saw the our promo for that up on the video monitor, and I was like, that's a pretty cool thing to get as a license. So you'll be able to do essentially a Lord of the Rings escape room with yep. that.
Escape from Mount Doom.
Escape Gollum. Escape Gollum's cave.
Escape Bilbo's kitchen.
We also got Vampire the Masquerade's new Cult of the Blood God, which
that's
is...
That's a metal-sounding
It is. Collection. It's all the different like cults in the vampire world.
Okay.
It's
kind of just cool. A new expansion for the vampire yeah. RPG?
Yep. We got the Stardew Valley board game, which Stardew Valley is one of these video games people like.
Yeah, it's like, I think it's one of those ones like the what's the farming one that everybody plays? Harvest Moon.
Yeah.
Like a little sort of Japanese RPG.
Not Harvest Moon, Animal Crossing.
No, Harvest Moon.
What?
I mean, Animal Crossing is the big thing now, but Harvest Crossing has been around since, like, the 90s.
Oh, okay.
It's the farming game that has, like, a little bit of sort of, sometimes a little light dating sim elements and stuff, but it's got, usually had, like, the little chibi characters that look like old Japanese RPGs.
Okay.
Stardew Valley, I think, is, like, the successor to that. It seems to be the one that's kind of become...
Like a very chill game.
Exactly, yeah. Sort of a laid-back, comfortable game, a cozy game. I don't know if this is a cooperative game, because it does seem like Stardew Valley seems like one of those that'd be weird to do as competitive.
I don't know.
I think it might be.
No, they completely flip on its head and it's competitive now, and you.
I'm gonna wreck your farm with my peaceful yeah. farm.
Then there's you can go over and set those farms on fire.
Welcome to beautiful Stardew Valley.
Not only is competitive, but you can actually stab whoever loses the game.
I mean, technically, you can always do that with any game.
That's true, and that's why I stopped playing games with you.
I'm guessing it is a cooperative game of yeah. chillness.
That sounds delightful.
You can all stab one person.
I'm just going to graze him.
We did get a bunch of new magic stuff. We got the yeah. Commander and Legends of Baldur's Gate.
Yep.
We got a bunch of the...
Well, essentially, the new Magic line hit, the whole new line.
Yeah, but we also got intro decks, finally, for
yeah,
Magic.
We've been wanting intro decks forever. They're, what, $10.99?
Yeah, $10.99.
For two decks and yep. how to play and all that
yep.
stuff.
Best way to get into Magic here in this box set.
For about, like, what, 2 or 3 years when someone says, hey, what's a good one to start with? Well, usually we have to say, you know, like a commander deck or one of these other challenger decks or something, pre-release thing that's like a pre-constructed one. But they just weren't putting out anything that was specifically for starting and like had like a two-player thing in it. Finally, for reasons I'll never understand why, they got, but they did get around to it, so yay, compliments to them, please keep doing that.
Yes, and we have starters now.
Yeah.
And then finally, a couple things from Asmodee. We got B-Movies and Kinect Team, which are like a couple party games. I've not just to dig into them just yet, but they both look pretty cool.
Yeah, okay. They do.
All right. Talking news, and the big one, I think, is the Black Adam trailer.
Oh, yeah. Should I have watched this before this?
You did watch it. I know.
Mean, I don't remember what happened in it.
You had the reaction that I had.
It's okay. You say a big one, and it kind of looks like a... blah movie to me.
It really does. It's a really bad trailer.
I saw this on the...
You say really bad. I say, like, underwhelming.
Well, I guess if the movie doesn't suck, it's a really bad trailer.
I think it was a poorly made trailer on, you know, the level of DC movies. Because DC is usually okay with trailers.
Yeah, sure.
This one
should be able to put together a good trailer.
Yeah. This one felt just kind of lackluster.
Yeah, it did.
And some of their, like, the over-dubbing, like, this is a hero that kills. I'm like, all your heroes kill. What are you talking about?
I know what... Everybody knows what they mean by that. Batman yes. might have to kill at some point in one story every 10 years or whatever. But, like, Black Adam is a guy who will clearly do it.
I was just repeating a joke that I thought was fun.
Oh, okay. but, like, Black Adam is a guy who may do it a little bit more often. Even enjoy it.
I think their marketing people were like, we got The Rock as Black Adam. All we gotta do is show that and everybody be happy. And I'm like... You still got to tell us a story.
I honestly don't think The Rock...
Sometimes the first trailer, I don't mind if it's like sort of a mood piece, and it basically shows him... What? There's like a ship or something he's in, right? Does Kandak have high tech or something?
Not usually.
I wasn't sure if they were positioning them a little like Wakanda or something like that, where they had like elevated
tech. I don't know if Black Adam really needed his own movie. I know The Rock has been desperately wanting to play this character for years and years. I just think he should have been incorporated into the Shazam movie.
But this looks like a JSA movie. And that's the thing that's interesting to me. It's like, the most interesting
right,
Black
Adam...
Right,
so we see Dr. Fate...
Dr. Fate, Hawkman, and Adam Smasher.
And Cyclone.
Yeah. Cyclone. Adam Smasher.
No, Cyclone, the girl.
Oh, I forgot about her. I guess I didn't know. The thing is, for me, Black Adam has never been more interesting than he was in Johns' JSA, and so I like the idea of that version of him.
Yeah.
But I also, like you, Nick, I'm not sure I needed a Black Adam movie.
It's a little like doing a Bane movie. Bane is a pretty good complex villain when you do him right, but I don't know if he should ever have a movie.
No.
Black Adam is like, there's superficial similarities to something like Black Panther, because he's the leader of, what, an African nation? Middle Eastern, more specifically, but... and he's,
they both have black in their names.
They are sort of sovereign rulers who take no shit. Black Panther happens to be, kind of more on the secretive side. And I think they're both guys who are sort of, patriots for their country in different ways. Like that's usually part of the story is, imagining this, otherwise, hard-pressed Middle Eastern nation, but like, oh, what would it be like if you had this guy who was, like, sort of a slightly honorable dictator, is how they usually present him. Kind of like sometimes Submariner can be.
I have a question, because I don't even remember this. What is Black Adam's origin?
So he's a thief in, like, Shazam's time.
Ancient Egypt times, yeah.
And he was given the powers, and that was it?
I don't know.
Because in the trailer, he says he was a slave, he was killed, and then he was somehow resurrected by sons, like, sacrificing himself.
They're clearly doing their own thing.
And I was like,
that's ever been
I was like, that, okay.
Although maybe for all I know, Geoff Johns might have done something like that. It does sound a little Geoff Johns-y.
It does. Yeah.
The JSA stuff was kind of neat, but, like, we had seen those characters in, like, some little very short sizzle reel from, like, 6 months ago or something like that. Mm-hmm. This was not the trailer that they needed to kind of get some energy going, since it seems like all the actors they keep hiring keep being Ezra Miller and Amber Heard, and so it's been a bit of a rough year for their actors.
That is the one thing I'd like... Aldous Hodge playing Hawkman and Pierce Brosnan being Dr.
Those are
Fate.
Those are good casting.
Who's Aldous Hodge?
He's the guy. He's the cop from Invisible Man.
Yeah, that's right. We talk about this sometimes, but I never remember. Stuff.
He's from Leverage, which you haven't seen.
Okay. But yeah, it's too bad. I actually like. I think that there's potential in the Black Adam movie. It'll be the first time in a while that I've seen The Rock trying to play. I think, like, a slightly higher level of drama, not quite the drama comedy that he tends to... Or, like, action comedy is what he tends to do.
Right.
And I know... I'm sure there'll be some humor in this, but I don't think there's going to be a ton of it. It'll be interesting to see if he can manage to stretch a little bit in that department. But, yeah, I'm going to need to see a better trailer.
Yeah, agreed.
For sure. There's a Ghostbuster animated series coming to Netflix, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm for this. I mean...
I actually think, like, I never watched much of it, but The Real Ghostbusters was one of those fairly celebrated animated series of, what, 90s or maybe late 80s?
Yeah.
And I know that, like, J. Michael Straczynski wrote for them and other people, and they, it was pretty good. It's fondly remembered, and they still reference it in comics and stuff. Still sometimes make figures, I think, too.
I obviously loved the movies, but I grew up with the cartoon show and had all the toys and all that other stuff. So that
did you have an Ecto-1?
I had an Ecto-1. I had Holy the Firehouse.
Crap. Wow. That's the G.I. Joe aircraft carrier of Ghostbusters toys.
My mom would not let me have the slime that came with the house, because if you put the slime at the top of the house, it oozed throughout the entire of the firehouse.
I remember it from the ads, yeah.
She said that was too much of a mess, so I couldn't have that.
Yeah, no adult should ever give a kid slime.
So, like, a new animated series, if they... essentially take the best of what they had already done before and, have some cool animation. Yeah. I feel like this could work.
Yeah,
I agree.
Do you remember the cool Men in Black cartoon from the 90s?
Yes, that was one of the early works of Darwin Cook.
Yeah, he did the opening.
Darwin Cook
did
that.
That's right, before he would go on to the sort of legendary Batman Beyond opening.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Men in Black cartoon is good.
That Men in Black had a dope-ass opening.
That opening's great.
I feel like that kind of animation style, that kind of reedy, thin, kind of look... would fit the Real Ghostbusters, or are they calling it the Real Ghostbusters?
No, I don't think it's just
at this point the lawsuits are settled.
Yeah.
I assume it's. if they want to, like, you know, tie it into the movie or something, because I know they're already doing a sequel.
Right, the guy who's working on it is the guy, or like at least one of the executive producers is the dude who made the movie, which is what, Ivan Reitman's son?
Yeah, Jason Reitman.
Yeah. I was not in love with the movie, so that's maybe a mark against it for me, but you know, if there's some good creative folks in the mix.
And you guys said it was a bad movie. I actually really enjoyed the new Ghostbusters.
I didn't say it was a bad movie. I just said it was boring.
Okay, I take it back. Dave said it was really...
I have to look up what I gave it on Letterboxd. I'm going to guess 2.5 stars.
That sounds about right.
I gave it 3, I think, or maybe even 3.5.
What? Easy there.
Yeah.
I gave the Batman 2.5. It was better than the Batman.
Don't get us protested, Nick.
You can protest me for all I care.
I really wanted to like Ghostbusters Afterlife. I was not super into it.
Oh, I thought it was a lot of fun.
It was all right. Anyway, Seth Rogen.
2.5.
Okay. Seth Rogen is doing a TMNT movie, apparently. Live action?
No, I think it's an
animation. He's producing, right?
Yeah, it's an animation.
No, he's playing all 4 turtles.
Cowabunga, dude, you want to go get high?
I believe it is an animation as well.
Okay.
That his company, which does a lot, actually.
Yeah, they did The Boys, did Preacher.
Yeah.
I was under the impression, just from what I had heard, I thought it was animated.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think he wants to go back to sort of the turtles' roots. I don't know if they're all going to have the red bandanas or be a little more violent. But if they skew towards kind of what Kevin Smith did with He-Man, I'd be okay with that.
I feel like the turtles, they've had several...
They've rebooted a few times in the last 10 years.
Yeah, but they've all been bad.
Yeah, but why would this one be different? Everyone always says, no, we're going back to their roots. That's what they always say. We're going to go a little darker this time. And it's never right.
Well, right. Seth Rogen might be able to actually pull off something like that. Boys is good, right?
Boys is very good.
Boys is actually an improvement on the comic by y'all's accounts.
I don't know how much is Seth Rogen, how much was Eric Kripke?
I think it could be all the people involved at this point. Cause...
Did Seth Rogen produce that Pam and Tommy thing?
Oh, yeah.
He did.
And that was pretty well done.
That was good, yep.
So as long as the Ninja Turtles thing is exactly like that.
Yeah.
With lots of talking penises.
If Raph and Don make a sex video.
I don't know. I guess I like the Turtles a lot. I grew up with them as well. And
Eternal?
Yeah,
Hope Springs Eternal. This seems like one that's a little bit more likely than others to maybe find some footing. We'll see.
Yeah. I guess for me, I don't have a particular fondness. The Turtles are fine.
Well, I don't have a particular fondness for Masters of the Universe, but both the She-Ra cartoon and Kevin Smith's He-Man cartoon, Masters of the Universe thing, both ended up really good. And you know, allowed me to kind of indulge in nostalgia for a little while. Like, I'm not going to be like, oh, I can't wait for the next He-Man revival. I'm like, okay, that's probably got me covered for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
But, like, I can't say, I actually never particularly watched any Ninja Turtles cartoon. I was there at the dawn of time when the black and white Ninja Turtles were created, and they were hardcore motherfuckers. and so I got everything I needed from them. And every cartoon afterwards has seemed like some commercial for pizza to me. But like, it's
potentially... I will have you know that the Italian for Pizza Hut was very good.
I mean, that does sound like... I like Pizza Hut. I don't want to disparage them. No, but in other words, if they pulled off a good one, I could watch a season or two of Turtles and maybe enjoy that and then be done with them for the rest of my life.
Can never be done with Heroes on a Half Shell, Dave.
So
Turtle Power.
Apparently, Bruce Campbell is going to write a Sergeant Rock versus Evil Dead miniseries for DC.
Yeah. Is it? I was under the impression it may be just like the Dead, and
yeah, it's not Evil
it's
Dead.
It's not Evil Dead.
I thought it actually was.
No. Dead. I thought
it'd be much cooler if it was, but I don't think he has the license per se.
Okay. All right.
I think it is just a
Sergeant Rock versus zombies or something.
Zombies.
Okay.
Which sounds cool.
Yeah.
I'm down for it.
I have this feeling that Bruce Campbell may not be the best comic writer. He may be a good writer. I think he's a good writer of the Bruce Campbell autobiography.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not a great writer of anything else. but, you know, I wish it well. I hope it's cool. I like Sergeant Rock.
Yeah.
I like things.
No one does anything with Sergeant Rock.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a weird gap. But I think also probably comic companies are coming to grips with not wanting to, well, I was going to say, like, glorify a military, but even in his earliest appearances, all Sergeant Rock comics are anti-war comics.
Yeah, they're about how much war sucks.
Yeah.
And it's even worse when you add zombies in.
Now, it does help that they were drawn by some amazing artists, like Joe Kubert and Russ Heath, and those guys just did some of the best artwork of the 60s. But, yeah, I like war comics as a genre... Well, first of all, only Garth Ennis is allowed to do it anymore. but yeah, I don't know. It's, what do y'all think?
Maybe Sergeant Rock should team up with the Haunted Tank to take on the undead.
I'd like that.
That'd be great. Yeah, like if he, General, what's his name? Jeb Stuart?
Jeb Stuart. J.E.B. Stuart.
J.E.B. Stuart could be like, you know, I ran into these varmints back in the Civil War or whatever, because he's a Civil War ghost, right?
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, he can tell them.
He called them varmints.
Yeah. Well, these dang varmints came up out of the grave, and I had to shoot them with my tank.
Well, gal dang. So this is a bit of news. I'm kind of surprised. A friend of mine pointed me to it. It still feels not quite real. I feel like there's some Marvel announcements coming, because... Blade has started filming.
Yeah.
We haven't officially had a Blade announcement.
No.
Like, we know that he's going to be... We know Mahershala Ali is in it, but we don't know anything else about it.
It's true.
And then Jake Schreier, who I don't remember the name... I don't remember what I've seen him in, or what, if anything. He's directing Thunderbolts. Which, again, they haven't officially announced. They've been building to it. If we're right, that's what Julia Louis-Dreyfus' character has been building together. It's like U.S. Agent and Black Widow... And maybe they'll bring in Hawkeye, but...
And Zemo.
It's all speculation. We have no idea.
Right.
I thought something had been confirmed. Nope. People are all buzzing about
it. They announced the director. So they are doing it.
Okay.
But that's it.
They should... time for them to get ahead of things, which it's already slightly too late for, and go ahead and announce it.
Yep. But I'm excited about this. I want to get the Thunderbolts movie. I think they're going to do sort of the Warren Ellis-y... criminals being redeemed kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which is not a bad pitch for
it. Or are they going to put them in different costumes and call them different code names? And
I think that's not a bad idea. So let's just real quick tell people, because Thunderbolts was a 90s phenomenon and its original incarnation, done by Kurt Busiek, who does the amazing Astro City comic, and this was one his... What's that?
And Mark Bagley.
And Mark Bagley. Yeah, who's, of course, most people will know best from Ultimate Spider-Man now, but he got his start in the 90s, and... this was a big comic at the time for one of the coolest twists in there. The short version is that all of Marvel's big heroes were gone for a time, and the people looked to a new team, and the new team arose, and there was a mystery as to where these heroes came from. At the end of the first issue, right?
Yep.
First issue, they are revealed to be the Avengers' greatest foes, the Masters of Evil, in like new costumes, clearly scheming to like win the public's heart. Ultimately, we will learn, I believe, for different reasons, some for redemption, some for manipulation, and et cetera, et cetera. Is that fair, Randy? You've read more than I have.
Yeah.
And it was a cool book. You know, a smart superhero book with the bad guys as the heroes.
Yeah.
I think that still appeals, and when last they did a version of it, Warren Ellis did one that was kind of like the Marvel version of Suicide Squad.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
They were Norman Osborn, who was heading S.H.I.E.L.D. at the time because he was a skeevy bastard. Like basically was like, you know, hey, you'll get time served, parole, whatever, if you go on these dangerous missions for me. And it was a great 12-issue run.
Mm-hmm.
Super good. If they take inspiration from that, and you know, hopefully also some of Busiek's original stuff, it could be a really cool movie.
It occurs to me, something Nick mentioned, that they can't do the twist thing where it's the Avengers would be revealed to be these new heroes were revealed to be villains.
Yeah,
that we all know.
We're gonna know before this movie comes out.
But they could do a thing where the Thunderbolts is like the government's attempt to create a new Avengers.
Yeah,
and so U.S. Agent is their Captain America, Black Widow is their Black Widow.
I think
Abomination could be their Hulk.
Yeah.
Like they may do that, be like, here's the villains, and Zemo could be, I don't know what Zemo would be.
The only problem with
Hawkeye.
That is
Hawkeye. Yeah, maybe.
The only problem with that is John Walker is a known quantity and people watch him kill people.
I don't think that's hard to surmount in the Marvel Universe. I think you do a thing where it's like, yeah, no, he's being redeemed.
Right? Didn't he kill somebody who was a bad person?
Yeah, he killed a terrorist.
Yeah,
that's like, that. Literally... Honestly, that would be fairly easy to retool in the media. Yeah.
If the whole thing is that, like, Julia Louis-Dreyfus' character, Countess
Contessa de la Fontaine,
yeah, whatever her name is, Val.
Allegra De La Vendetta.
If she's basically the manipulator they've shown her been, then she's basically going to create this team that is like the government's Avengers. That would follow right into the sort of the plot lines they've been doing around Civil War and all that stuff, around the government wanting to have its own super team.
It's true.
It'd be interesting. I don't know. Yeah. I'll be curious to see what they do with it.
It's a cool... there's cool possibilities.
Yeah. Uma Thurman and Henry Golding have joined Old Guard 2, the Netflix movie with Charlize Theron.
That's awesome.
That first movie was fun.
I like that movie a lot.
I've decided it's maybe finally time for me to watch it now that it's been like 5 years or whatever.
But Dave, it's about assassins.
I know.
They're not really assassins.
No,
are they?
They're mercenaries. Mercenaries are a subset of assassins.
Yeah.
Or assassins.
I guess there's enough weirdness going on, and like I've heard enough good stuff about it that I will.
I mean, it's Charlize Theron being a badass.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
That's not actually not a big appeal for me.
No, really,
Charlize Theron's in a bunch.
Charlize Theron being a good actress is an appeal for me, but I never even watched Atomic Blonde.
Oh, okay.
And it doesn't have any because you know what Atomic Blonde is? Another one of those kind of Pittman type
but
movies.
Charlize Theron is this era's Gina Davis. She's badass.
Gina Davis, didn't she only have one movie where she was that person?
Long Kiss Goodnight, and I feel like she was in a couple of others.
She was also in her dumb husband's dumb pirate movie, too.
Yeah.
And Cutthroat Island, yeah.
Yes.
That was
infamously bad.
And also, what's the movie with Gerard Depardieu? Green Card. She's a badass in that, right?
Yes.
and 6 Days, 7 Weddings, or whatever it is. 4 Weddings and a Funeral.
Yeah.
I don't think she was that.
That's Andy McDowell.
No, they're the same person.
There's other women with black curly hair, Randy, in the '80s.
Going
what are we talking about?
Gina Davis being a badass in romantic comedies is the joke.
Right, but what's the current?
I mean, Thelma and Louise. She's badass in that.
That's a drama. That's a good drama.
No, they murder a dude.
That's a good drama. Thelma and Louise is one of my favorite Ridley Scott movies.
I've never seen it.
Man, it's good. I think it holds up even.
It does.
I think it's still got something to say today.
Interesting. Batman Azteca is an animated movie set in Mexico.
To me, it sounded like you said Batman Azteca. And I'm like, what's Teca?
Batman Azteca.
Azteca, like Aztec stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a little bit of preview art for this that does have him looking like, you know, like sort of like an Aztec legendary hero, like Jaguar Paw or one of those ones.
Yep.
And
well, it's not even Bruce Wayne. It's like a totally different take on Batman.
But there is a certain, like, I read the description, and it's like one of those giant, like, sort of pyramidal Aztec temples. Mm-hmm. is like there's like a temple to the bat that's like his secret base. Hmm. And I think he's fighting colonizers.
Okay.
Colonizing, you know, like, I guess, is it Spaniards? English? Who are the early ones? It'd be conquistadors and stuff, so Spanish. Yeah.
Sounds awesome. So
it sounds awesome. Yeah, I think they're going to essentially re-envision Batman as an Aztec warrior at the dawn of colonization, kicking the shit out of colonizers.
Bring it on.
It sounds good. I always liked the early days of the Elseworlds, at least, where it was like, Batman is a fighting mad priest. Batman in Gaslight times, you know, Batman as a pirate.
Yep.
Batman always had the lion's share of Elseworlds stories, and I like them. I have a feeling I believe they're doing their due diligence in this, and which is to say, it is not just being made by a bunch of white guys who are like, you know what would be neat to do is Aztec Batman. Like, I think they're working with lots of Mexican-American scholars, writers, trying to, you know, have it tap into, you know, mythology and the culture and all of that, and I think it sounds like they're going to possibly do good.
Cool. Justin Lin is directing One Punch Man. Nick, did you look this up? Is it he's doing animated, live action?
I don't know.
I bet it's live action.
I would
like
imagine
Scott
it's
Pilgrim style.
Yeah, I have never watched a minute of the One Punch Man.
I watched a little bit and then I fell asleep.
Well, you do that most anime. Though,
I do. But that's true.
So let me see if I can rewind for a minute. One Punch Man is a bald man kid. He looks bald.
Yes,
he looked like a kid to me, but I guess he might be a man.
Did you not hear the bit where neither Nick nor I have seen it be like a minute of
There's osmosis, cultural osmosis. I believe he can instantly defeat anything with one punch and is always searching for something that's a challenge to him.
So it is a live action.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's about a person who can basically beat anybody in one punch.
Yep. What I have tried to guess at, and what I don't really want to research it for one second, is that how you spin this out into an ongoing series. I get the gag. I get that he probably is like, oh, this guy might be the one to finally challenge me, and then he, like, takes the dude out with one punch. And then I'm like, well, on to the next one. Mm-hmm. And I guess you repeat this for years and years and years and years, and people like it. But
I mean,
that's probably
be
not
more.
Being fair. I know it's funny. Our buddy Chris Nicholas, who runs Staple, the comic convention, it's mm-hmm. you know, got sidelined by the pandemic like everything else. But for, like, how many years did Staple run? 10 years? 15 years?
At least 10.
Yeah. Chris is a good dude. I remember that was one of those manga that he liked. I've got friends who've liked it. So talking all this trash is just talking trash.
I mean, it's on what, volume 25? Or...
Right. I believe it to probably be a witty and enjoyable crazy romp.
Yeah.
But I cannot in my head picture its staying power.
Yeah.
Anyway, like a movie? Is that what
sure.
it is?
Yeah. Sure.
And who's in it, or what's the?
And we just know that Justin Lin.
Okay.
He dropped out of Fast and the Furious 11 or whatever.
Is that one of those things? Because
Fast 10.
Vin Diesel or the other guy.
Yeah, Vin Diesel.
Probably
London
asshole.
Heads.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Well. Good
yeah.
for him.
Maybe. and then last bit, we've heard that Tim Sale is in the hospital for something serious. Nobody knows what. It's being kept sort of private, which
yeah.
is fine.
Just
but,
in case Tim Sale is not a name you'd know just immediately, he did Batman Long Halloween,
mm-hmm.
probably most famously. He did all the Spider-Man Blue, Daredevil Yellow, the color series at Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a super talented artist who kind of emerged in the late 80s or early 90s and with his kind of quirky style. And it's just like several artists and people in the industry have said that he's in the hospital for something kind of serious, it sounds
yeah,
like.
Yeah.
I saw Bill Sienkiewicz and like a few other people reporting on it. But, you know, here's hoping the best. Tim's one of the greats.
Yeah.
Are the color series in print right now?
Not really, no.
Oh,
they did
man.
Like an omnibus recently that I think
yeah,
we tried
got
to get.
It and then it was gone.
It came and went.
I swear, I mean, Hulk Gray is not my favorite, but Spider-Man
those are all pretty good.
Spider-Man
like
Blue and Daredevil Yellow are amazing.
I will defend, I think Hulk Gray is good, and I think Cap White, is that what it was?
Yeah,
Cap White.
Was also good. Like, I think they're all worthy, but I would say, like, Daredevil or Spider-Man is probably the best of them.
Yeah, yeah. We're hoping, wishing him well.
Yes.
All right, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back to talk about comics for the week. We're talking comics for the Wednesday, June 15th, and, last week was like a huge week for comics.
Yeah.
This week is not quite that huge, but there are some big things.
Yep.
Among them, but we usually talk about the single issues first, but I'm going to mention some graphic novels this week.
Yep.
Because, for one thing, y'all know we're all big fans of Reckless, the series that Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips does. This is a
yes.
crime series. It
yeah.
comes out as standalone graphic novels, maybe once or twice a year. Jeff Lemire has taken a page out of that book, and he is doing a new series of
horror graphic novels
with his contributor Andrea Sorrentino.
The name of those are The Bone Orchard Mythos.
The Bone Orchard Mythos.
It's a cool name.
Andrea Sorrentino, you're going to remember as the artist who worked with him on Gideon Falls, and if you were following it back then, his Green Arrow run for DC, too.
Right, right.
I'm going to go ahead and pick this up today and check it out. It's shrink-wrapped, so that makes it sneaky and difficult to flip through. But I bought a copy and I flipped through it, and the art looks really good and creepy, and it has a lighthouse at the beginning, which you know I like. It seems to involve this creepy sort of little chasm or hole near the lighthouse that has some mysterious property, which makes me think of Junji Ito stuff.
Yeah.
So this pitch was... Basically, Lemire and Sorrentino were working together on Gideon Falls, and Sorrentino wanted to do something darker but expansive, like the Cthulhu mythos. Standalone stories would share a common mythology. They wanted different formats, and so that's what led them to this.
I definitely see the appeal of doing that sort of thing like that Lovecraft in some ways did pioneer back then of, you know, these stories that kind of stand on their own but might have... recurring characters or the text of the Necronomicon or the Miskatonic University
yep.
and all of that stuff, which, you know, now we're very used to it. Like, arguably, though, that was kind of the progenitor of a lot of sort of shared world
yeah.
stories.
Yeah, for sure.
Now everyone's trying to do their own shared world.
Yep, yep. They tried it with the monsters, though, and it didn't work.
Tom Cruise failed.
But, yeah, I've read this, although I need to give it a reread. I know, Dave, you're super excited about this.
Yep.
People who are looking for horror graphic novels, is probably a good thing to check out.
Yeah, or just if you like these same creators on Gideon Falls or, you know, any of their other stuff.
In a very different vein, but also kind of cool, Penguin Classics has put together some Marvel graphic novels this week. So there's three different volumes. Amazing Spider-Man, Black Panther, and Captain America. And they are essentially the first 10 issues of the series in full color. But it comes with, like, introductions.
There's, like, a sort of scholarly essay sort of thing. Yeah. Like, it's to me, and it's not, I think, always necessarily just the first 10 issues. Like, the Captain America one is, like, 10 early important issues. Like, it includes some stuff by Jim Steranko, the earliest stuff by Kirby, like Joe Simon and Jack Kirby. I'm not sure if the others do any sort of similar splits and stuff like that. But it is like, to me, it struck me as like the equivalent of like a special edition Blu-ray or something like that of the early days. Like a really cool gift item for somebody.
Yeah. There's also, as you look at the Spider-Man one, for example, there's at the back, there's two covers that have the original black and white covers by Ditko before Lee rejected them and had them redraw them.
Oh, right.
So it's got a variant cover on Amazing Fantasy Spider-Man and a variant cover on Amazing Spider-Man number 10. There's also a suggestion for further reading of further Spider-Man stuff to read. Some cliff notes. Like, this is, like Dave said, sort of a classic and academic version of it.
What it sounds like to me is, like, the coolest thing that I read when I was a kid growing up was the Smithsonian put out, like, this collection of comics that, it had everything from, like, reprints of EC comics to a reprint of the first Superman, funny comics like Little Lulu, but also, like, early C.C. Beck, Captain Marvel, Pogo from Walt Kelly. Like, it had all this stuff, and each one was preceded by a little essay, like, oh, why is this important? Why did we choose this issue? And I would read those actually over and over, and they formed the basis of a lot of knowledge I had about the comics industry and, you know, getting a sense of the early history of it and who these writers and artists were and what was shaping them at the time. And it was really fun. Like, it wasn't like... Sometimes you say scholarly and it just sounds so dry and dusty, but to me it was very exciting to read about these characters.
Yeah.
And I feel like these will be both good gift items, and if you get them while supplies last, we have these cool book plates to give out that have like this gold leaf kind of thing on them. They're really nice.
And also the hardcover versions, the softcovers are cool, but the hardcovers are like really fancy looking with like gold trim. They would look great on like a bookshelf.
Yeah. And if you give them to somebody, they're going to be like, oh, this person likes me.
So then we go on to we might as well finish talking about the graphic novels. There's also the Grendel Omnibus Volume 1. Grendel, I don't know if you guys know this, is coming to Netflix.
Oh, I'd forgotten that.
Yeah, Matt Weider's been posting about it. And these are the Omnibus versions of the Grendel series. Previously, they were in sort of the digest format, and honestly, a little hard to read. This is the full size, and it is it's Grendel Black, White, and Red. As well as the Devil by the Deep, which is like the one shot that basically revamped his entire indie story into one big story. And
is this like later Grendel stuff?
So here's the original stuff. I believe that Matt Wagner is a weird guy in that he doesn't want to
reprint the earliest.
The earliest stuff, he's like, it's not very good.
Interesting.
So Grendel Devil by the Deep is his remastered version of his original thing.
Okay.
It is like, here's the story in a sort of almost illustrated prose comics format of the Grendel saga as it had gone to that point. And then Black, White, and Red, Red, White, and Black, which are anthologies by a bunch of creators, including, as we mentioned, Tim Sale.
Randy, quick tell me, because I have never really read any Grendel, remind me, what's the basic premise, since the only Grendel I know is the monster from Beowulf.
All right, before I do that, let me finish saying what's in this.
All right.
There's also Grendel Behold the Devil, which is a longer story that Wagner did that is basically a Grendel year one kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
So Grendel is basically, he's a...
it's like a criminal or something, right?
He's a criminal. What is a prodigy? He's a prodigy.
Uh-huh.
So he's
They're all criminals.
He's this kid who, like, he's a genius, he's a musical prodigy, he's a tennis prodigy, I think. Everything comes easy to him, and he decides...
Leonardo da Vinci of crime.
He decides to become, like, a master criminal. He puts on this suit... He has this forked staff that he uses, and he becomes like a crime lord. And his villain is a sort of bestial werewolf named Argent, who is actually like a detective for the cops.
Oh, weird.
And he has an adoptive daughter who he adores, but who his Argent is also fond of, so there's like this weird thing going on.
No, he has a mask that looks like it reminds you a little bit of like Rorschach or something like that.
Yeah.
But is this in a world of superheroes?
No.
Okay. More of like a pulp world?
Like I say, there's a werewolf who is his nemesis.
That's why it seems a little pulp.
The Grendel, and as he goes on and does more with Grendel, it becomes a thing where he goes to the far future, that kind of thing. And Grendel is meant to be sort of a dark spirit that is like temptation for a man, that kind of thing. And Hunter Rose, the first Grendel, this is his, like, that's his thing, that he is this genius who's afflicted by this desire to do dark things.
That sounds like it. That also sounds like the sort of pulp tradition of characters like Dr. Fu Manchu and a lot of those early novels like Dr. Moreau.
Well, what's
interesting
is Grendel is he's a villain, but he's the protagonist, absolutely.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I can't quite picture is like, well, like, do you see him just killing innocent people and stuff like that?
They usually put him up against other organized crime people, but they do have him.
Sort of like what we see.
Bad things.
Sort of like sometimes what we see with the Darth Vader things, which is he's up against people who are worse than him or worse in certain ways.
A lot of it is very sort of psychological. It's very much about the sort of like psychology of a master criminal.
But you know, I was always a fan of Matt Wagner from his Sandman Mystery Theater days, which was had like pulp crime stuff going on in it.
I'm kind of surprised you haven't read this.
Yeah, it was just one of those. It's just one of the gaps in my knowledge of like sort of 80s and 90s indie comics.
Okay,
I read when he crossed over with Batman.
I think I read that too, although it's been a while.
Yeah, I remember enjoying it quite a bit.
Yeah,
and then there was a Space Grendel, right?
There was a Space Grendel. That was the most recent thing.
And Matt Wagner is a good artist too. I don't know if he draws all of this, but
I'd completely forgotten it was a Netflix thing. I assume they're going to be making Mage next.
That'd be nice. I just want that Mage hardcover, the third Mage. They didn't collect it. So, all right, let's jump over to the single issues for the week. The big release for Marvel is Captain America: Sentinel of Liberty. This is the Steve Rogers and Winter Soldier version. We already got the Sam Wilson one.
And this is sort of something from his past coming back that he didn't know about, or there's a mystery involving his lineage.
There is. Yep. Hulkling and Wiccan, which is a story in which there's something happens where Hulkling and Wiccan explore alternate worlds where they have different relationships, and it's sort of which of them they don't remember being married and being the emperor of the Skrull
Kree-Skrull Alliance or whatever it is,
and it's an interesting little.
I thought it was good.
Yeah, it's really good. What's the movie I'm thinking of? The Christmas movie, Wonderful Life.
Oh, it's Wonderful.
There's a little bit of It's a Wonderful Life of like them exploring this alternate thing, and it's all they. It opens, this is great, it opens with them basically summoning to space North Star and his husband and Iceman, the other two famously gay characters.
Yep. Yeah.
And they have a gay dinner party.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah. And in that they're talking about marriage, and North Star and his husband are talking about the difficulties of being married and that kind of thing. So
yeah, that sounds good.
It was a really good one-shot.
Yeah, it's a good one-shot. It's also timed out for Pride. Marvel's doing a few things, not as much as DC's doing, but they're doing some.
Yeah.
Marvel Tales, New Fantastic Four, reprints Fantastic Four 347 to 349. That's Walt Simonson writing, Arthur Adams penciling. The FF disappears, and a new FF is formed made up of Spider-Man, Grey Hulk, Wolverine, and Ghost Rider.
Yeah. I was telling Nick earlier that basically my take on it, because I picked these up at the time I was reading his run, was that because almost all Marvel was going crazy with anti-heroes. Everybody in there was an anti-hero for a little while, for like a few years in the 90s. And he kind of did a tongue-in-cheek thing where basically a whole group of these anti-heroes replaced the Fantastic Four. And it was done with not fully tongue-in-cheek, but a little bit, and had super cool art by Art Adams. It was a good time. Like, it sounds like a trashy cash-in, but if anything, it's kind of a little bit of a lighthearted spoof of that.
Yeah.
But the story does take itself seriously. Like, these characters get to be cool.
Yeah. And
but
it involves Skrulls.
And it has Skrulls in it.
It does have Skrulls.
I like Skrulls.
Yes.
Which is also a new tie-in for the new Fantastic Four, which starts up, what, in like 2 or 3 weeks?
I forgot. That's
who's doing that?
It's not Simonson, is it?
I thought there was some lineage to it.
Is it Peter David?
Oh, I'm not sure.
You're talking about like just a new basic FF book?
No, it's
called New Fantastic Four.
It's I got you.
And it's starring Ghost Rider.
Kind of the same way that they do the symbiote Spider-Man and... Yeah. Not Maestro. Yeah. What's the other one that they're doing? Oh, Venom. Venom Lethal Protector. Ben Reilly. They're sort of doing some throwback things, so yeah.
So, yeah, that is coming soon.
Yeah. That's why this has came out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think people who have not read this would dig it. There is the Image book, Do a Power Bomb.
So, I don't have a super love of wrestling. I think I have old school WWF love back in the 80s and early 90s.
Yeah, okay. The era of Hulk Hogan, Iron Sheik, Roddy Piper, Macho Man. Yeah.
Yep.
However, I love Daniel Warren Johnson.
Yeah.
And this is his ode and love letter.
For those who don't know, he did the Eisner-nominated Beta Ray Bill that just came out.
He also did Murder Falcon.
Murder Falcon, which we just got the hardcover of. One Room and Dead Earth.
Yep.
Is that the big thing?
He's currently doing something else we're going to talk today.
Jurassic League,
yes. Dinosaur Justice League coming. Yep.
But this is his love letter to wrestling. And it's about a young girl whose mom is a famous wrestler. And during a match, something bad happens.
Yeah, there was an accident.
Yep.
And so now this girl is wrestling against her father's wishes.
Yep. Trying to sort of make it, having a hard time finding a trainer.
But there's some supernatural stuff in it.
And then, some supernatural stuff occurs. The art is just kinetic. It's so great. Fun.
It's really good.
This was a blast to me.
Yeah, I'm not what you call a huge wrestling fan either, but I did enjoy it.
I haven't read it.
Image also has Seven Sons, which is a new book from Jay Lee. This is takes place in 1998, so it's like an alternate 98. Basically, there's the second coming of God is coming to Vegas, and it's like this cult that has turned it into a whole thing. It's a weird religious cult thing. Like I say, alternate timeline, more horror than anything else. But if you like Jay Lee, and sort of a sort of sci-fi taking a religious fable sounds interesting.
I heard it. I remember when I was making the sign that they described in the solicit. I don't know if this at all ends up accurate, but as The Fugitive meets The Book of Revelation. And I was like, that sounds kind of fun. Is there somebody on the run?
I don't see that in the first issue, but I'm going to guess that maybe their Jesus figure winds up going on the run.
Right. That's you've read the setup, but
somehow Jesus becomes Richard Kimble.
Speaking of DC Pride, they produced the Tim Drake special, which is a reprint of the Tim Drake story in Batman Urban Legends where he came out as bi. And I think there might be some original short story.
I have heard that there is a lead into basically some new stuff coming up, like what's next for the character.
Because okay. this is just a reprint. Yeah. Like.
But if you missed that originally, that's pretty notable.
Yeah. Because a lot of people did miss that.
Yep.
But yeah. And it says, it leads into Dark Crisis Young Justice.
Okay.
So, yeah. I think that's all the new stuff. Oh, no, Dave, I see the Street Fighter swimsuit special, a tradition.
Sure. Have to always mention the trashy Street Fighter swimsuit special. You know, it's funny, we were talking about it earlier. They put out one of these each year. Was this from Unon Studios? Yeah. And, it's like all cheesecake and stuff. Very much modeled on the old Marvel Universe swimsuit specials, which were themselves modeled on the Sports Illustrated swimsuit specials. Usually they're weirdly in the sense that it's unusual in comics, equal opportunity, like lots of super buff dudes and stuff, as well as hot chicks.
Yep.
This year seems to be light on the buff dudes, although there is one notable one.
Yes.
The one that I dubbed the best pinup of them all is a cute one where Chun-Li, who is kind of like still falling out of her swimsuit a little bit, like you do in these things, someone is helping her balance awkwardly on a skateboard like she's trying to learn to skateboard. And it's just cute, and it's got a little bit of flavor to it. Other than that, it's a trashy swimsuit issue. but if that's your kind of thing, more power to you. A
couple big number twos this week. Blood Syndicate Season 1, which continues a pretty interesting revamp of the gang, the superpowered gangs of Milestone. Yep. And then Jurassic League number 2, which is just as fun as the first issue was, I thought.
It was a lot of fun.
I also want to mention the fourth and final issue of G.I. Joe Saturday Morning Adventures.
Yep.
This is the one based on the, so often we have talked up G.I. Joe, and we're pretty much always referencing the comics by Larry Hama. But the cartoon had its own crazy sci-fi-ish appeal, and this is based on the cartoon and all its sort of silliness, and had Cobra Commander getting Aladdin's lamp and creating, giant... What? There was like a giant, what are they fighting? A bat. The battle android trooper in the first one. Yeah. Anyway, this is, we're down to the wild finale in this one, which has like a big, like a bunch of fighting between the Joes and the Cobras, a final last minute attempt to outwit the genie since they're essentially almost both fighting him now, both G.I. Joe and Cobra. And it involves Shipwreck, his parrot,
Holly,
a card game, and a bunch of other fun stuff. And there's a good knowing is half the battle at the end of it. I was actually very happy with how it wrapped up, and at this point I will probably pick up the graphic novel. It was a good, silly, fun time.
And then, Nick, you've got number two of Grimm over there, which is the Grimm series.
Focusing on sort of a Grim Reaper of sorts who is somehow able to interact with the humans as, like, a human, which is an interesting concept. I thought the second issue was a lot of fun and adds some story elements I wasn't expecting. I also have the third issue of Nightmare Country, which is part of the Sandman universe, following the Corinthian as he kind of unearths a weird kind of mystery going on.
Yeah. Corinthian is sort of like Morpheus's nightmarish agent. Would you call him that?
Yeah, is he like essentially his hitman? I don't know.
Yeah, that's kind of what he feels like.
Oh, that's what Dave didn't like it. He's an assassin.
No, I did like the first issue of this.
Oh.
Neil Gaiman's, I'm going to say if everybody wrote Hitman as weirdly as Neil Gaiman has invented them, then I'd probably like Hitman.
I will say this has one of the most unnerving covers, and it's simple, but the Corinthian is eating steak with his eye.
Right, he's got the mouth eyes.
And that just, it just weirds me out.
That's disturbing.
It's a good painting. This is written by James Tinian, who you may remember from us recommending something from him every week.
This also has two different artists working on the issue, one of them being Francesco Francavilla.
Oh, okay, longtime favorite.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. All right, I think that is it for Comics of the Week. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to talk about some TV. All right, so a couple things we want to talk about. Nick and I have been watching some TV, and we're going to put spoiler warnings right up front. If you have not seen Ms. Marvel on Disney Plus, go watch it. It's great. And we're going to talk about season 3 of The Boys, which also has a lot of surprising twists and turns, and you should go and watch it.
It's true.
Including a guest star who also made a surprising guest turn in another big thing this year. She's having a good year.
Yeah.
All right, so that's your spoiler warning. We're going to talk about Ms. Marvel. We're going to talk about The Boys. I'll start with Ms. Marvel.
Okay.
I loved this. I actually think it's the best first episode of a Marvel show they've done.
I think maybe Hawkeye I liked basically on the same level.
I love Hawkeye. You know I love Hawkeye.
I know.
It's one of my favorite characters. But Ms. Marvel, I feel like I've been waiting for this show for 8 years.
I think this has some of the biggest personality that any of the shows do.
It also, key to this is casting. And that's what Marvel's always been so good at.
But true.
They nailed the casting of this. Not just Iman Vellani, who is playing Kamala Khan.
But everyone.
But Bruno, what little we see of Nakia and Zoe.
Mm-hmm. The mom and dad.
The mom and dad. The mom is, of course, she's played Pakistani mom in a million things. Most notably in Big Sick.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
She's great. It's a similar character.
Yeah.
He's sort of...
she was the mom in Big Sick.
She's the mom in Big Sick.
And that movie was good.
Yeah. She's great in this. And then her brother. I like her brother a lot, too, I think.
I like what they did, because in the comic, the brother is a little more antagonistic in this.
He's a little more aloof. They give him a little more care. They give him a little more of a relationship.
He feels more like Kamala's big brother.
Yeah.
And kind of sticks up for her a little bit, while also being a little, aloof.
Yeah. I thought the job they did with her mom and dad was phenomenal.
Yes.
They did a great job of, the banter between the two of them. I like that her dad is, basically trying to be... he's the more diplomatic of the two, and the mom is just like, no.
Right.
And I really liked... This felt like Ms. Marvel to me, even though it's very different. Like, in the comics, she gets her powers from an Inhuman's Mist.
Right.
The whole first issue is about her getting her powers and shape-shifting and all that kind of stuff. Her powers are different.
Yep.
Her origin is different. There's so much different here, but it felt 100% like Ms. Marvel and Kamala Khan.
What would you say, Randy, to people who I've seen this, there's people pushing back because they're xenophobes on message boards, but there's some people pushing back because they're fans and they're like, why did they change her?
The powers changed for a very good reason, I think. I think the stretchy thing would have been, it would have looked weird. I think there's probably a reason they did it. Or maybe they didn't want to duplicate with Reed Richards. But giving her energy powers because she's obsessed with Captain Marvel makes sense.
Yeah.
And the second thing she does when she gets her energy powers is a big in hand.
Yeah.
Like, these guys are fans and they know it.
Right. That's what I was guessing early on when I found out that she had these kind of these powers to create energy forms, that it would essentially do the same kind of thing she did without kind of being, like, potentially slightly body horror-ish.
Yeah. I think that's the thing.
I always thought that was probably actually a good call.
Yeah, I was wondering why they did it, and I still would be curious to know what exactly the reasoning was behind it, but...
I have an idea.
Yeah?
And it's just a fan theory from me. I think the band that's giving her is Kree.
You know, I've seen people say that maybe it's like inhuman technology, unlocking on the inhuman.
Was it a family heirloom?
It comes from her aunt.
Yes. Yeah.
But it's like, it's very old.
Yeah.
And it could be alien.
Does it just happen? Does something trigger it?
No, so yeah, she puts it on and it triggers.
Okay, just right away.
It may be a family, so like, if it is a genetic thing and her mother, her aunt was an inhuman and that they
I think
that,
they're moving a little bit away from the comic, but not much.
Maybe not entirely.
And I think this has a lot to do with... Isn't the creator of her, like, executive producing this?
Sana Amanat, who is the editor who helped create her, and who's... she and G. Willow Wilson are the ones who characters...
Yeah.
They were based on her.
Yeah. But I know she's involved in, like, producing this. And it feels... I mean, that, I think, just gives it this authenticity that... we have not seen in some of the others.
It feels like if they can somehow get Lockjaw in here, they will have gotten every single thing I want about Miss Marvel into it.
I don't know if we're going to get Lockjaw, although I know the actress has petitioned to have it in at some point.
Well, I saw a fan theory. Someone said they're going to give her Goose. And I'm like, man, that'd be really good. That would make so much sense.
Who's that?
Captain Marvel's cat.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, but is she going to get a Flurkin?
I mean, that would be kind of funny if she winds up in possession of Goose.
That's true.
And it also makes sense for Captain Marvel obsession. I assume, although I don't know, that Brie Larson is going to show up at some point.
I assume so.
But I don't know. That could wait for the movie.
It'll be like the stinger or something.
So, speaking of, did you watch the post-credit?
Yes.
I almost didn't know to hang out for it, because they don't usually do it on the TV show.
Right. Usually it's like the last episode.
What that was, right?
Yeah, it's Damage Control.
It's Damage Control.
Yeah.
Like, Cleary is one of the guys who is a Marvel comptroller. Yeah, they named, so they're bringing in the actual, like, Marvel Damage Control agents. So if Damage Control is in charge of all, like, superhumans now, and that part of this is going to be them, like, going out to her and, like, talking to her about, we may find out what Marvel does about superhumans in the post-Civil War.
It's true. It took me a minute to recognize who it was, and then they introduced a new, like, his partner, who was from Origins of the New Black, and she's a great actress, and I'm curious to see what she brings to this.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it opens some avenues. I'll be curious, because isn't Damage Control getting their own show at some point?
I think they are. I think they're supposed to be. But also, amongst the other stuff that they did here that I liked, there's some new stuff added in. The Scott Pilgrim-esque, like her drawings and stuff in the background are really clever, really well done.
Right, like the real world photography is integrated with bits of animation and stuff.
Her phone conversations with
Bruno. A whole bit with the Texas taking place in Signs. And there's some clever stuff in there.
And the crux of this entire episode was her getting to go to Avengers Con.
Yes, I was gonna say that's the thing. The thing the MCU does well is it takes what would be going on in this universe. And explore. So instead of her just being like a general superhero fangirl who plays like the MMO, and she is specifically into the Avengers because of Captain Marvel, and she's going to the first ever Avengers Con held at Camp Lehigh, where Captain America.
Yep.
So like this weird bit of like superhero celebrity, I think that's a really neat little touch.
And also, I always wondered how the general public knew everything that had happened in Infinity War. Scott Lang has a podcast, and he blabs like crazy.
And it's makes so much sense.
It does.
I was about to say, is that meta at all? Did that actor blab at all? That's really mostly Tobey Maguire.
Paul Rudd.
Mark Ruffalo and Tom Holland are famous for blabbing.
Yeah, that's true.
Tom Holland, yes.
But Paul Rudd or Scott Lang, he has an in-continuity podcast that apparently they really want to do at some point.
That'd be great.
I don't know what he does, but I'm sure he's had many guests on there. Yeah.
There's also the new character, Gabe Wilson, Gabe W. Wilson, who's her guidance counselor.
Yes.
It's an obvious nod. It's a nod to G. Willow Wilson.
Yeah.
But also, this is the first guidance counselor I've seen who is both a cliche of the, you know, useless guidance counselor.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I liked him. They made him instantly likable.
Yeah.
He's very queer-coded, which I thought was kind of cool. And he is a guy who's like, he gets her. He doesn't quite get her the same way her mom doesn't quite get her.
Mm-hmm.
But he understands, like, where she's coming from. And he's actually trying to help her and not just, like, be like, hey, focus on your studies and all that kind of stuff. I thought that was a really interesting character, and I liked that as an addition.
My one question about this series, yep. And I didn't finish reading Ms. Marvel because, I don't know, reasons. I love the book with what I did. Is there going to be a villain in this?
Well, I know that Red Dagger is cast.
Okay.
And that is one of the... He is like a Pakistani hero, the anti-hero.
With a
like,
little twist into
yeah,
it.
I believe that that will be tied in, but...
Because I remember the first villain that she goes up against was, like, the avian guy?
Yeah, the little weird inventor dude. And I don't think so, but I don't know. Also, by the way, I love the way they did Bruno's technology.
Oh, yeah.
Him building an Alexa that speaks Urdu for her family.
I like
that her family is friendly with Bruno. I like the sort of that bit.
Honestly, at the core, it's a family drama, or a family relationship, and they... Nail that.
They did. They nailed it down.
The dad...
And you feel like the tone is different from the previous Marvel outings?
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
TV ones.
Yeah.
The dad wanting to go with her, his daughter, to AvengerCon dressed up as the Hulk.
That was fantastic.
It was amazing.
Is he supportive dad?
Yes.
He dyed his beard green.
This reminds me of the show Never Have I Ever over on Netflix.
Yeah.
In tone and
agreed.
Approach and that kind of thing. And
100%.
It's really, really good. And... I'm really curious to see where they're going forward, because I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to zip into traditional sort of superhero versus villain, or obviously we're going to get more about her aunt.
Yeah, and her backstory.
Backstory, like, and where the bangle came from.
But they're using this to do origin stuff, so she's going to be in the Captain Marvel movie. She and Monica Rambeau are both in the Marvels, so...
And that's I think it's going to be, like, crew-related, because all of their stuff are sort of cosmic level.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Level.
Yeah. But, it's a really good first episode. I was very, very pleased, and I had high expectations for this.
I can't wait for tomorrow, because that means more.
Yep. Yeah, that's right. All right, and then the other thing is The Boys Season 3.
Which is the polar opposite of Ms. Marvel.
Yeah, yeah. Well, The Boys opens with a man exploding his boyfriend from inside.
Yep.
Actually, The Boys opens with a previously on... That is full of exploding people.
Yeah,
like they're fully aware that what they're doing is basically gross body horror a lot of the time.
Yeah, and I don't know why it works.
I don't either. I think part of it is Eric Kripke from Supernatural.
Yeah, and then they will do kind of like good story arcs or show people with heart and like they're actual people, because like Huey is I super relatable. I think.
Garth Ennis, who created the series, likes to do these sort of nebbishy heroes, and then he'll give them their moment of sunshine, but mostly he spends 12 issues crapping all over them.
So here's the thing. It feels like The Boys by way of Hitman, where Hitman had heart.
It's got a little more heart, yeah.
More like Heartman.
Yes.
But I think Huey, who's the lead, he's very much the lead of the show.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Jack Quaid does a great job.
They've done this new thing where basically like he's part of this anti-superhuman government task force.
Yep.
And what had begun as sort of a vigilante action by The Boys, now he has like gone legit, and The Boys
work
Butcher
for him.
And those guys work for him, and they're supposed to be doing like police work types things and not just beating people down and blowing them up.
I mean, that still happens.
It still happens, but he doesn't want it to.
But
and then there's a twist as to what's going on with that, which I thought was really good.
Yeah. Things quickly go at a tits up, essentially. Yeah.
Well, there's also the story of Vought Industries, which are the ones who create superhumans.
Yep.
And there's the story of, like, because I think in the Boys in the comics, and I haven't read all of them, I've read some of them, but basically it seemed to be like these military normal people dealing with these out-of-control, psychopathic, sociopathic superheroes.
Yeah.
And that's still here, but it's, instead of it being like a group of heroes... It's like it is a corporation that wants to be a pharmaceutical corporation that created superheroes as a way of sort of like getting their product out. It was like this is their PR move,
led by Mr. Edgar, which is
from
Giancarlo Esposito,
who's as good here as he ever was in Breaking Bad.
Yeah,
Saul. But they're,
or in Star Wars.
The central problem is that Homelander, their Superman type, is a complete psychopath.
Yeah, and somehow I still like him.
Oh, the actors do a fantastic job. Because basically this kid, he was, as a kid, turned into a superhero.
Yeah.
So of course he turned out a little fucked up. But he's real fucked up. He's like, there's such great tense stuff. When he's on the roof with the jumper.
Oh.
It's like his birthday, and he's supposed to, he saves one person a year as his birthday, so he's going to save the suicide jumper. But basically he's up there, and something happens that sort of triggers him. And you can tell, oh shit, he's going to kill the suicidal girl.
Well, what triggers him is that
his Nazi girlfriend
killed herself. played by the wonderful Aya Cash.
Yeah, yeah. I love like that type of thing is really great. The bit where he sort of snaps and goes on this rant about how he is better than everyone else,
yeah,
and it raises his ratings amongst the white men who like him.
Yep.
I was like, man, you guys are onto something here.
But it's also the small stuff. I really love what they're doing with Frenchie and Kimiko.
Yeah, that's good.
Just their scenes together, there's like such good chemistry.
Yeah.
Like the scene at the amusement park that, of course, goes awry, but how she sort of laments not having a childhood and being able to ride roller coasters with her brother and stuff like that. It kind of gives what's happening around them a sort of core that I actually give a shit about.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's something to this where it's got a lot more depth than it did as a comic. The same characters, the same ridiculousness, Wee Huey and Mother's Milk and all the Diana stuff.
But,
like, those names are in there, but they've deepened them all and made them more than just a joke.
Mother's Milk, his storyline this season of being sort of, he'd quit the boys.
Yeah, he was trying to be just a dad who didn't swear.
And this sort of obsessive compulsive nature, he is so fixated on Soldier Boy, who apparently killed his family at some point.
And Soldier Boy is Jensen Ackles from Supernatural, playing their psychotic Captain America.
We've only seen him in a flashback so far, and he's insane.
Mm-hmm.
As all of the people he was involved with in Vietnam.
And then the temporary V, where like Butcher can now give himself superpowers.
Yeah, I will say the hardest scene for me to watch was Carl Urban kind of like trying to push away the kid. I was like, that kid needs you, even though you're completely like the wrong person to raise that kid.
Yeah,
you're a better barometer for, you know,
better than Homelander.
Better than Homelander.
That's really Butcher's only thing. He's better than Homelander.
But Carl Urban,
Urban's great in this. Everybody's good in it. Like I said, the cast is phenomenal. The guy who plays Homelander is really, really good.
And I forget the woman's name who plays Starlight.
I don't remember the actress.
She's great, and they're doing all the sort of American Idol, like, who wants to be the next superhero kind of thing. All this stuff that feels very kind of what we do now in society, but, you know, taken to that superhero level.
Let me ask this, of the various, like, they've done different R-rated movies, superhero movies over the years, from like Hancock or Watchmen, whatever that horror one was with the evil little kid, Superman.
Oh, yeah.
Or whatever. Like is Boys kind of Head and Shoulders the best version of it because it's got something to say and it's more entertaining?
Except you mentioned Watchmen, and the HBO's Watchmen was phenomenal.
Okay. Yeah.
But this is the only, it's better than everything else but that HBO's Watchmen.
I agree.
Yeah, it's really good, and it's on Prime, which does not do a lot of stuff I like, but somehow, Garth Ennis comic, plus Prime.
Minus Garth Ennis, plus
minus
Prime.
Garth Ennis. I don't know what it is. Something
plus
about
Kripke
it.
And
plus Eric Kripke. It all works on a way that I never expected to work. It's very watchable and very fun.
I actively look forward to Fridays
when
this show is on.
Man, there's a lot of show on. There's a lot of TV on right now.
There's too much TV. And I say that kind of jokingly, but there are shows I forget come out. And I guess that's good, because in 6 months when I have nothing, that doesn't actually
ever
happen. Because the idea of seasons anymore doesn't exist.
Well, like, Evil came back this week. Season 3 of Evil started this week.
So. And it was a humdinger of an episode.
We can't say too much because they watched it, but it's a great episode.
I love that show comes on Sundays.
Yeah.
It's just a nice little, a bit of a fun.
Yeah.
And I am so glad to have those characters back because it's always an exciting show to watch.
Yeah, and even though I haven't seen it, we've talked about that show a lot. And, you know, if you haven't seen it, even if you do, you know, it's on Paramount Plus, which also, like, has Halo and Star Trek now. Mm-hmm. All the good Star Trek stuff, especially Star Trek Strange New Worlds, which is Like winning over just like massive amounts of people. It's ridiculous.
Yep. Yep.
So it's worthwhile, I think, just to straight up have Paramount Plus right now.
Yeah, I agree.
But even if you only do one of those like week-long trials, I think Evil is maybe of those the most approachable ones. Mm-hmm. And like you just go watch a few episodes or watch the first season, binge it, watch the first two seasons.
They're not super long seasons.
No, they're not. They're not
like 10 episodes.
Yeah. Yeah. Give that show a look. It is something pretty unique and special.
Yeah, I definitely recommend it. All right. I think that'll wrap it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time.
Yo, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.